Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there again, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to be talking about the Armenians who fled their homeland during the First World War, dreaming of returning to recapture it from the Ottomans, and the plight of those Armenians who were then enrolled or who volunteered for the Armenian Legion of the French Army, and the betrayal that they experienced at the end of the war when the Middle East was divided between the victorious powers. Now, if you're a fan of the brilliant journalist Robert Fisk, whose writings on the Middle East are pretty much indispensable, you might have seen him review the same book I'm going to talk about by Susan Paul Patty in The Independent last week. It's getting some real plaudits, and it's a fascinating story, one which really gets very little attention indeed. The hope that many Armenians fighting in the Légion d'Orient or the Oriental Legion had was that they would be able to fight in their homeland. They would be part of the army of occupation of Armenia that would, after the Ottoman forces had been removed, would be part of the reconstruction of Armenia. However, the betrayal that they experienced at the hands of the French and the British left large chunks of Armenia as part of the new Republic of Turkey. The context to Armenian participation in the war, or Armenia's position in the war, is really, really important to understand. So, at the beginning of the 20th century, most Armenians lived within six vilayets of the Ottoman Empire, six provinces. However, some had migrated to cities such as, of course, Constantinople, and they were part of the fabric of the empire. They were looked to by the Young Turks as a part of a possible modernising coalition that could transform the empire. In the 1890s, they were subject to a series of massacres by the Sultan Abdulhamid II. And the late 1890s saw the emergence, as I said, of the Young Turk movement. But gradually in the 1910s, the Young Turk movement became less about modernising a multi-ethnic empire and creating a modern and progressive commonwealth of Ottoman peoples, and more about creating or preserving what was left of the Ottoman Empire. So it became very much kind of Turkish chauvinism, as opposed to kind of progressive multi-ethnic pluralism. In 1909, a new series of massacres of the Armenians began, the Adana massacre, in which 20,000 Armenians were murdered and their towns and villages were destroyed. Armenians also were subject to resentment across the Turkish Empire, as they were seen as having special status due to their Christian religion. Now, this couldn't be further from the truth. Of course, within the Ottoman Empire, non-Muslim subjects had, to some extent, protected status, though obviously the murders of Armenians meant that they weren't being protected but from the state itself. But they also had higher levels of taxation and other restrictive laws imposed upon them. The resentments towards Armenians are typical of the kind of the prejudices and bigotries that you find in nearly all colonial societies towards minorities. And by late 1914, the idea of a kind of a multinational Ottoman Empire had been replaced by a Turkish, a Turkocentric view of what the empire should be. Assimilation or annihilation became the options to minorities. So Susan Paul Patty writes, "Unfortunately, many Armenians placed their hopes on the promises of intervention by Western powers during the First World War, particularly France and Great Britain. This proved to be a naive and treacherous belief, but as it was, their other chances were slim or non-existent. On the 24th of April 1915, intellectuals and leaders of the Armenian community in Constantinople were arrested, deported to the interior, and most were killed. With this opening began months of mass deportations, rape, pillaging, executions, and ultimately genocide throughout the empire, but particularly focused on the six vilayets in the area of Sicilia. Attacked by Kurdish bands, goaded to their death by Turkish gendarmes and soldiers, Armenians were driven from their homes, and an entire culture and way of life indigenous to the area was erased from the region. Most of those who did survive owed their lives to brave Turks, Kurds and Arabs and others, including Western missionaries, who took great risks to help Armenians as they were able. These included some important officials, both Turkish and Kurdish, mullahs, and many ordinary folk who may be counted among the righteous. Very few Armenian towns and villages took up arms to resist and defend themselves. All but two of these lost their greatly unequal battles. The people of Van were rescued after 1 month by the nearby Russian army and Armenian volunteers. The more famous resistance is the 40 days of Musa Dagh, which also reached a successful ending as a French ship anchored near the bottom of the mountain and rescued the people." So that gives you the context to the genocidal violence of the Ottoman Empire against the Armenian people. When the French warship that had rescued the Musadar Armenians arrived at Port Said in British-controlled Egypt, the beginnings of an Armenian legion were possible. 4,000 Armenians had escaped down the side of the mountain to the sea to flee the Ottomans. And the first idea of using Armenians as troops, sort of auxiliary troops anyway, for the Allied armies was made in November 1914. As part of a British landing at Alexandretta. The British landings at Alexandretta, or the question of Alexandretta, is one that famously divided the British and the French. James Barr's A Line in the Sand goes into Alexandretta in great depth, and had there been a successful landing there, it's entirely possible that the war against the Ottoman Empire and perhaps even the Central Powers could have been won. The French weren't too keen, however. With the shelving of the Alexandretta plan came the shelving of the Armenian Legion that would be used to support it. The British thought that Armenian mobilisation would lead to reprisals against the Armenians within the Ottoman Empire, and they didn't wish to bring this about. They didn't also wish to be responsible for the mass killing of Armenian peoples. The Armenians, negotiating with the British and French, wanted, in return for their cooperation, an autonomous Armenia, which would comprise of the six provinces, the six vilayets of Van, Erzurum, Bitlis, Diyarbakir, Sivas, and Marmara Talaziz, which make up eastern Anatolia. This would remain within the boundaries of the Ottoman Empire, but be protected by the Allies. So the Armenians initially weren't asking for a breakup with the Ottoman Empire, they were asking for special status within it. The chief Armenian negotiator, Bogos Nubar, wrote in May 1915 to Sir Francis Bertie, who was the British ambassador to France, and he wrote that the Triple Entente inspires us Armenians confidence for an approaching salvation and the accomplishment of our national goals through raising their voices in favour of the Armenians who have been subject to Turkish harassment for centuries and by officially declaring themselves as protectors of our unfortunate nation. So throughout the war there were similar voices from Poles to Zionists to Czechs and Slovaks to the Serb and Croats who were looking to create the Yugoslav kingdom, all placing their faith in the Allied powers, hoping that something would come of it. Britain had little interest in Armenia, looking to Mesopotamia or modern-day Iraq, really, for its interests. The British wanted to defeat Constantinople quickly before the Russians arrived there. Of course, up until 1916, this was a distinct possibility. During 1915, they focused their efforts on the Dardanelles. The British rejected proposals for the Armenian Legion even till August 1915. One of the features of the First World War was this desire to prevent peoples from fighting too well, from having too much of a seat at the negotiating table. This is one of the reasons why, when approached by Yuan Shikai, the Chinese dictator, Woodrow Wilson, Yuan Shikai offered 500,000 Chinese soldiers for the Western Front. Woodrow Wilson declined, not wanting to take him up on his offer, because by putting him at the Chinese at the negotiating table, they'd be able to throw off Western imperialism in China, and particularly Japanese imperialism in China, and Wilson wanted to keep the British, the French, and the Japanese suite in order to form the League of Nations.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So having the Armenians fight too well would have been in 1915 a bit of a nuisance. The British made fairly kind of weak arguments about their concern for the well-beings of the Armenians, knowing full well that massacres were already ongoing. And they had already kind of openly condemned these in a joint statement in May 1915. Susan Paul Patty writes, "The Armenians' encampment at Port Said spurred a new wave of negotiations among Allied and Armenian officials around the possibility of enlisting these refugees as auxiliary fighters. It set the new stage for French-Armenian collaboration. The refugees, looking to the French for help and in part owing their lives to the French humanitarian mission, were willing, as a sign of gratitude, to work loyally for France's success. Moreover, by the end of 1915, the Gallipoli campaign had become a dismal failure." So it's the failure of Gallipoli that starts to change British and American French minds, I beg your pardon. "Not only did this military fiasco compel the Allies to look for a new front to outflank Ottoman forces and knock them out of the war, but also acquire the regions they considered post-war spoils, namely Mesopotamia, the Levant and Sicilia. Consequently, the French, who saw Levant and Sicilia as their traditional zone of interest, feared their outnumbering by British troops in Egypt and loss of regional control. The British were also disgruntled by the presence of Armenians at Port Said, whom they saw as a financial burden and prospective troublemakers. They also saw them as being essentially French stooges. The scarcity of monetary contributions and relief from the Armenian community of Egypt exacerbated the situation. Confusion emerged about what to do with the Armenian refugees, and they became a matter of correspondence between the French ministry and the Armenian representatives in Egypt, when efforts to send them to Italy, Cyprus or Morocco failed. British military authorities in Cairo inquired whether the French authorities proposed to make any use of the Armenians they brought there. Otherwise, the British planned to send them to Gallipoli and Mudros, where they would be of great use as workers on imperial construction sites, in exchange for their admittance to safety in Egypt. However, the French were not only pressured against this proposal by the Armenians, but had other intentions for the Musadag refugees. The French War Ministry thought it was necessary to form additional fighting units to counterbalance the British presence in the Levant, which is present-day Syria and Lebanon, given the heavy casualties the French troops had suffered in Gallipoli and on the European fronts. There was a lengthy period of training for the mainly French-led Armenians who would fight under the command of both the British and the French later on. The war saw them fight in Palestine, but the main ambition of Armenian legionnaires was to fight in Sicilia, the eastern Anatolian provinces which would make up present-day Armenia. The legionnaires hadn't reckoned on there being really pawns in a bigger imperial game. They assumed, in a degree of naivety, that they would be given uniforms, arms, and training and set loose to defend their own interests. Instead, they were used mainly for fighting to liberate Palestine, and it was assumed that they would make their way eastwards to liberate their homelands and save what was left of their people. However, this was very far down on the priorities of the British and the French. Susan Paul Patty writes, "From the first mention of the formation of the Legion, the goal was to reach Sicilia and defend what was left of the Armenian people, their towns and villages. The hopes of the legionnaires were focused on their original lands, the fate of their families, and on building a future out of the ruins. Independent Sicilia was the dream, and until the end, the men were frequently encouraged by colonial powers to believe that this could be achieved." One Armenian diarist mentioned that high-ranking French officials and officers spoke about this with them, including Dr. Louis Roland, the chief physician of the armed forces, who later commanded considerable authority. Apparently, he expressed the opinion that in a short time, the creation of a Sicilian Republic for Armenians would cease to be only a wish and would become a reality. Colonel Edouard Bremond, chief of the French supervision in Sicilia, initially presented himself as governor of Armenia and Sicilia. Following the armistice of Mudros in October 1918, ending hostilities in the Middle East, the region was divided between the British and the French. However, in a further complication of this process, it became clear that the French were not prepared to expend further lives and financial resources on its occupation where serious resistance was found. Such resistance was presented in Sicilia, exactly the area where the Armenians had believed they would receive the support of the French and the British. The Armenians who made it back to from the Legion to Armenia at the end of the war, who were demobilised, were briefly under the protection of the British and the French. However, the British had lost interest in the area fairly quickly, focusing on their own interests, particularly on the newly found oil of Mosul. And the French had also little desire to wage war in order to protect the Armenians, and the French who remained became increasingly distrusted by the Armenians. And of course, you have the resurgence of Turkish, of new Turkish nationalism under Mustafa Kemal at this time, and the internal politics, sort of revanchist politics, of the what remains of the Ottoman Empire developing. And so the populations of the Turkish populations of the vilayets of Sicilia were not minded to see themselves ceded over to being part of an independent or a semi-autonomous Armenian state. The Armenians, as I previously mentioned, hoped that the British and the French would stick around to establish a protectorate for them in the Ottoman Empire. And at some point they even looked to see if America might step in to be their patron or patron power. For a while, between them, the French, well, mainly French colonial troops, Senegalese and Algerians, and the Armenians policed the new vilayets, or the Armenian Sicilia. However, there was clearly the development of ethnic rivalries emerging, the kind of Balkan, quite literally Balkanized, Turkish-Armenian clashes that were developing within the region, and high levels of Turkish anxieties that they might now be subsumed into an Armenian state and be the ethnic minority. The British let their Turkish prisoners of war go eventually, who went straight to the front line, many of whom armed themselves along the way or retrieved their arms that the British had kept, had seized from them, and they made their way to Marash, which was the going to be the flashpoint of ethnic violence. And the British, in typical fashion, if you consider the relations between the British and the French between the end of the First and the end of the Second World Wars, almost actively sabotage French operations in the area by sending an armed and revanchist party of Turkish soldiers, or a large number of Turkish soldiers, against the French. Days of fighting at Marash saw thousands of Armenians killed. The French made token efforts to prevent this. And the very abrupt exit of the British and French from the region in general saw a huge mass migration again, a mass flight of Armenians, some into Russia, many attempting to leave to Europe and America. And there were those that fled to Lebanon and Syria, along with their French patrons, who dominated those two colonies until the Second World War, protectorates, should I say, despite the misgivings they had towards the French. So what we have here is the intersection of great power imperial politics with the ambitions for national sovereignty and survival, and it's a story that we see replicated again and again throughout the 2 to 3 years after the First World War. Anyway, The Armenian Legionnaires by Susan Paul Patti is an excellent read. You can find it in all good bookshops, published by my good friends IB Taurus, and I recommend it to anyone who really wants to find a deeper narrative about the First World War, and one which is kind of very often obscured from us, and the complications of making peace. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.